That's okay. We'll live dangerously. Okay. So, as I said, at any moment, the sources may or may not occur or come. So let's at least begin. One of the strange things with the number of the parshiot in Bereshit, it's Noach, and then it's Lech Lecha, and then it's Vayera. Each one of them, you do not get the full picture, and it's Chaisar as well. Each of them, there are at least some commentaries that will start the new parsha by saying, oh, you've got to look at what happened at the end of the last parsha, because it's not a new story. It's just a continuation. And how and why and when we made these divisions, so you all know that that's a subject of scholarly inquiry. So let's take a look at the end of Parsha Noach, because that's where we find our introduction to Lech Lecha. V'yichi Terech 70 shana, v'yolad et Avram et Nachor v'et Haran. So we're told that Terech lives for 70 years, and he has his three children. By the way, I've made this observation before, but I've done it so many years ago, so I can say it again. I'm allowed to say things after many, many years. And that is that you look through the boring parts of Bereshit. What are the boring parts? All of the laundry lists, right? Right, the names. I have a word for it, the begats. The begats. That's what it is, right? He begat, he begat, he begat, he begat. And you go through all of the begats, and it's absolutely boring, so I'm sure that you all skip it, because there's really nothing that you can get out of this. A number of years ago, I gave a shiur on Parsha Noach, which, if you recall that shiur, I said was dedicated to my parents' anniversary, which I won't, right? What number are you up to?
63.
63, okay. So, I don't remember what number that one was for, but it was an earlier number. And then we try to trace the lineage of looking at Noach and looking at Noach's wife and so on and where they came from. There's another thing which is of note. And again, don't ask me why. I guess it's just a question of boredom, having nothing to do, and let's read all of these. I don't know. I have prepared Shurim during Simchas Torah. I mean, go ask me how Simchas Torah was. Go ahead. I felt like I was walking in circles. So, right? Right? It's awful. Oh, I have worse ones. What did Terach say? What did Terach say when he walked in and saw that Avram had broken all the idols? He said, oh my gods. Right? Okay, anyway. See, you know, there's certain things that rabbis can say that, you know, you guys just cannot try at home. It's just not going to work. Don't try this at home. It could be very dangerous. So going through all of the names, you notice something interesting, and that is that there are a couple of names that repeat themselves, but the first person to name his son after his father was Terach. Terach was the first one to name his son after his father. I have a very simple explanation for this, and that is that he was probably a Parsi or an Iraqi, and he didn't follow Minhag Ashkenaz. He followed Sephardic custom, and therefore he was able to name his son after his father. But what you do note by that is that by Terach, you know, we like to refer to him as an Oved Avodah Zarah, and so on. And at the very end of the Parsha, you'll have a Rashi that does the whole math in terms of Terach's longevity and when he actually dies, and part of the reason it's suppressed is because then you can accuse Avram of not keeping Kibbut Av or Kibbut Aim. But Terach seems to have honored his own father by calling his son after his father. I said the first one to do that. You're looking to see if it's really there or not?
Which son?
Which son? Not Avraham? No.
Nachor.
Avram's father's name was Nachor, and he named one of his sons Nachor. Terach. Terach's father's name was Nachor, and his son's name was Nachor. So that's at least interesting. I like to imagine that maybe Avraham's looking back at where things came from. What's the origin of things goes back to looking at his brother. Where did he come from? He came from his grandfather. While most of society looks forward, Avraham was looking backwards, and when you're looking backwards, then you begin to ask different kinds of questions. And if that's the case, then the genius of Avraham actually has its starting point in terms of Terach. But there's a second point in terms of Terach, which is quite mysterious. Yes, I just said there's a second point about Terach, which is, and that's correct, Jerry, from Las Vegas. There is a second point about Terach. And the second point about Terach is, and this is quite mysterious. The second point is that we find Terach on his way. And there's actually two points about this. Avram is, where was Avram born? You know the right answer to this question is? A machlok, it's a machloket, right? That's the right answer. Between who? So it's also easy. The Ramban and everybody else. I mean, this is these are very simple questions, even if you didn't come prepared. So, assuming that Avram is born, where do you want him born? Okay. Well, there's a lot. There's a lot of information to look at to figure that out. If you want to, we can do that, but not right now. Avram is born in one place. Let's just say Ur Kasdim, and then he moves over to Hanefesh Asher Sube Haran, right? Then he moves over to Haran. So I want to point. I want to like pause for a second. We, when I say we, it's me. Our knowledge about Avraham is really based upon two things. One, and sometimes we have a hard time distinguishing. One is based upon what the Chumash actually says, and the other is based on things that we learned when we were in kindergarten. So, right, with all the stories and so on, and the furnace. Now, just the furnace story for a moment. The Rambam, right, our favorite rationalist, he writes it not just in passing. In his book of Halakha, he writes this. He writes this in Hilchot Avodah Chachamim. He talks about the history of the world and beliefs and so on. He writes about Avraham and how Avram stood up for his belief system and Avram was thrown in the furnace. For the Rambam, that quote-unquote, some of you, well, that's just a midrash. It's real interesting that for the Rambam, that midrash is Halakha. By the way, that's always interesting in the Rambam. Anybody want, I can give you an assignment and sources to look at. It's always interesting to see in the Rambam which midrashim he took as fact. So here is a midrash the Rambam takes as fact that Avram was thrown in the furnace. By the way, there are mefarshim who see that as pshat in the Chumash because God says, I'm the one who took you out of Ur Kasdim. I'm the one who took you out of the furnace in Kasdim. Ur is, Michael? No, it's yeah, Ur could fire or could be very much could be the furnace, and therefore it actually says it. I took you out of the furnace. I saved you from the furnace. So if that's the case, so then this midrash that we were brought up on actually may have a place in text, even though right over here at the end of the parsha it doesn't say it. But I just want to move back for a second, just to feel a little bit bad for Avram. Avram was put in an impossible situation. What were his choices? His choices were either to die for what you believe in, which is interesting because people have done this in history, but if he had done that, then we may not have had the rest of the history. Die for what you believe in, or give in on what you believe in, but survive. And I want you to appreciate that the dilemma that he has there is not all that different from the dilemma which we all are far more familiar with, and that's the dilemma of the Akedah. If you sacrifice Yitzchak, then you prove that child sacrifice, human sacrifice, is something acceptable to this God that you believe in, who you claim needs no human sacrifices. So therefore, when God tells you to do human sacrifice, so therefore, what kind of God is this? So essentially, the belief system erodes. On the other hand, if he doesn't do it, then he's not listening to God. So then if he's not listening to God, then what's the point of the belief system? Which means he's stuck in this, as Kierkegaard would call, an either-or, and he loses both ways. There's no way out of this. Although I will point something out, which maybe you never thought of, or maybe, but really is quite striking. According to the Midrash, who's the one who gives him over to Nimrod? It's Terach. Terach, therefore, and you're not going to like this, which is okay, I can deal with this. Terach sacrifices Avraham for his own position. And that's very interesting, because Avraham now is called upon to do what his father did, right? Just like your father said. By the way, another point now. And this is also, I think, something very important to consider. If Avraham was sacrificed, and I know you don't like that, if Avraham was sacrificed but he escaped unscathed, do you think that may have given him a little bit more confidence facing the Akedah? Yeah, been there, done that. Yeah. if he can walk out of a furnace, so then that, okay, this is going to work out. This is...
It does say, I will return with
that. Right, correct. Correct. This is going to work out. Now, I know that on a rational, logical level, of course it's not going to work out. And that's part of what the whole test is over here. But let's just move back for a second. Avraham stands up for what he believes in. And the reward that he gets for this is he's about to be killed. He acquiesces. He doesn't fight back. He's sacrificed. Monotheism comes to an end. That's it. There's no future. So Avraham, as I'm saying, is an impossible situation. According to our tradition, how old was Avraham at this point?
75.
At the point that he was thrown into the furnace? Right answer, wrong question. My fault. I apologize. How old was he when he's thrown into the furnace? According to the Seder Olam Rabbah, he was 48 years old. How do they know that? Well, they're trying to work something into it, and essentially it's their knowledge of. So now I have to remind you of one of our favorite principles, and that's the principle of the theory of conservation of characters, of events. We'll get to the theory of conservation of holiness soon. Our theory of conservation of matter, our theory of conservation of actions. We're in the Chumash from the point of creation until the point where of Lech Lecha, which is what we're up to, do we find a furnace?
The
building of the tower. That's where you have a furnace. So making the bricks. So if that's where your furnace is, that's when Avram was thrown into the furnace. Who was the one behind the building? It's Nimrod. Who's the one who throws him in? It's Nimrod. So I'm going to say it again. Yes, Michael? It's okay she dragged you here? So this is the theory of conservation of matter. We have a furnace. So this furnace must be that furnace. So therefore, Avram was thrown into the furnace at the building of the tower. So all that works perfectly. Good. So the age of 48 is when he had that particular incident. According to the Gemara, how old was he when he got to Haran? According to the Gemara, yes, I'm enjoying myself. According to the Gemara, how old was he when he got to Haran? So the Gemara says as follows. The Gemara says the world's going to last for 6,000 years. Okay? Excuse me? We're getting close. Bizrat Hashem will all be healthy by then, okay? Mirtz Hashem. The Gemara further says that the first 2,000 were tohu vavohu. Nothingness. The next 2,000 were, what was the word the Gemara uses? Torah. And the last 2,000 were Mashiach. This came up in the disputation between the Ramban and Pablo Christiani, 2,000 years ago. What happened 2,000 years ago? And the Ramban responds what he responds. But Torah begins in the year 2000, according to the Gemara. What year was Avraham, you're going to get this right now, what year was Avraham born? 1948, right? 1948. You go from the beginning of the world, and you add all your begats together, and you will find, and the Seder Olam does this, and you'll find that Avraham was born since creation in 1948. How old was Avraham in the year 2000? 52. So therefore, when does Avraham start to teach Torah in Haran? At the age of 52. Okay? See how easy that was? You're still in 1948. See, so you're saying, did I pay for yeshiva education all these years? What's going on? I want my money back. We got a class action suit happening right here. By the way, according to this whole calculation, at which point, what year is it when God said, Lech Lecha? It's hard to know. Which point does he listen to Lech? That's 75. So what year is that when everyone's 75? He's born in 1948. And you have to take off your shoes for that one.
2023.
And how old was he then by the Brisbane of Sarim when he was 70 years old? Right. How old is he? And what year was that?
No. 5 years before.
Which is? 2018 is the Brisbane of Asarim. Okay. Okay, very good. So now that we got all that out of the way, you're still in 1948? No. It's from creation. It's from creation. None of that. None of that. Okay. So again, according to the same... Finally. According to the Seder Olam, Avram was born from creation 1948. If you want one more number to keep in mind, Avram is 48 years old at the time of the building of the tower. Noach is there and dies 10 years later, which means how old is Avram when Noach dies? 58. What's 58 in Gematria? Nunchet. Avram is Noach when Noach dies. Okay, good. That's it. That's the last trick I have for today. And now... Okay.
What was the last 2,000 years?
Mashiach. It's called Mashiach. So apparently the potential for Mashiach begins at the point when the Chorban takes place, more or less. From that point on, once you have destruction, now we need redemption. Now, that's probably more or less what it means. But 2,000 years of Nevuah is... There's a Torah Tamima that tries to work some of this out. It could well be 2,000 years of when Nevuah begins to when Nevuah ends. That could be the 2,000 years. But I said you have to work hard sometimes. But the beginning really is, the Gemara already says, the beginning is a Nefesh Yesher Asa B'charan, or Asu B'charan, and that's when Avram begins to teach, that begins to read. But I want to pause there for a second, which means that Avram had success, which means that Avram and Sarah had success. What, even though they were there, they were threatened, but now they're enjoying success. But I do want to now go back to what Jerry mentioned before, that Avraham leaves his hometown because he's not all that popular, I understand. Why does Terach leave? Meaning that becomes more interesting. Why does Lot leave? So I just want to stop for a second now. There are different modes of thought that different people have, or that different people have in different contexts or analyzing different things. There are some people that no matter what happens, they're going to look at things in terms of politics. That's what they're thinking is politics. There are some people that no matter what, they're thinking is going to be halacha. There are some people going to reading things in Tanakh, so then everything's going to have to be religious. So what kind of motivations do we have over here? See, that's where the problem comes in. That if we're going to ascribe to Terach a religious motivation, so then we have to say certain things about him and make certain conclusions or assumptions about him. If we're going to say that maybe this is not a religious issue, maybe there's more of a practical issue, then maybe we'll be able to look at it slightly differently. So therefore, the mode of thought or approach that we have is going to make a big difference in trying to understand what it is that happened. I will point out something else which should be quite obvious, and that is that a lot of commentaries are troubled with the beginning of Lech Lecha, but Yomar Shem El Avram, Lech Lecha Me'artzecha Me'ladecha Me'Beit Avicha. Why is this the order? Normally you leave your parents' house first, and only then you leave it. Avram has left his Eretz Moladito, he has left his Artzo, but he has not left his Beit Avicha. Why? Because his Beit Avicha has moved. I know it's not as nice as all the other answers which are given, but this one is actually true. I don't know. The mothers never count, do they? Oh. Okay. So what's with Terach? So good. Let's go back now and look at our famous midrash that I hinted at before that we all learned when we were in kindergarten. The smashing. Vayamat Haran al pnei Terach Aviv. First of all, note what pasuk the midrash is trying to explain. The point of this whole midrash is to explain why Haran died while his father was still alive. By the way, that phrase, Al Pnei Terach Aviv, I'm pretty sure it does not occur again. I'm pretty sure that phrase, Al Pnei Aviv, does not occur again. I checked also by Nadav and Avihu where they die while Aaron is still alive. But the phrase over here is not used in other cases, and that therefore has to lead us to think, so what does it mean, al pnei terach aviv? It could have said in his lifetime, it could have said many other things, But what this midrash is going to try to do is to give Terach a little bit more responsibility and guilt for what happened. And therefore, the Alpnei Terach Aviv is almost like it's because of Terach Aviv. That's what the midrash wants to do over here. Most of this midrash deals with Avram working in the store. And you know the story. I'll just quickly, we'll look at this. Rav Chiya bar Brei de Rav Ada de Yafel, source number 2. Terach Ovid Tzlamim Haya. He was somebody who worshipped Tzlamim. Chad Zman Nafik La'atar. One time he had to go away. Hoshiv Avram Ocher Tachtav. And he left Avram to sell instead of him. Hava Ati Bar Inosh Bo'i Diyizbian. Somebody, a man came in order to make a purchase. Vahava Amarle Bar Kamashninat. And Avram asked him, how old are you? Vahava Amarle Bar Chamishin, Oshitin, 50, 60. Vahava Amarle Vaile Lahu Gavr Dahavar Barshitin Oboy Lemisgad Lebar Yome. Woe unto the person who could be 60 years old and is bowing down or worshipping or serving something which is only but one day old. Vahava Mitbayesh Vahalechlo. And the person was humiliated and then left. Another time a woman comes with a plate full of flour in order to serve one of the gods. And over here it's in order to serve the gods. By the way, there's a woman named Simi Peters who wrote a wonderful book on Midrashim, and she points out the gender differences in terms of the two different people. The man comes, and you can use this by your table if you want on Friday night, and then blame Simi if you get a negative response. The man wants to buy the idol. The man wants to own, wants to control the idol, while the woman wants to serve the idol. So you can decide if there's something true. Avraham asks the man, how old are you? But Avraham is more polite and does not ask the woman how old she is. So as I said, how much she weighs. So you can do anything you want with this information, but you can decide, is this just, you know, poetic license, turn of phrase, going from one to the other, different examples, or there really is some kind of a gender issue over here within the way that the Midrash is trying to describe people, humanity serving gods and sees a difference between men and women. So, as I said, if you don't like this, then you can blame the idolatry. This has nothing to do with us. But it is, I think, a very interesting observation. Continuing in the Midrash, so here is where he goes, and he takes a stick, and he breaks all of the idols. Right? This is Avram as an iconoclast in the most literal sense of the word. He breaks all of the idols. His father comes back, and then he says, yes? Oh my God, it's excellent. He comes back and, right, what? Right, what? And Avram said, you know, you wouldn't believe it. You know, I put the food in front of the big guy, and then the little guy says, hold it, why is he gets all the food all the time, comes running and grabs the food, and the big guy smacks him, the little guy does this, and all these idols get involved in this fight, and the next thing you know, they're all smashed on the ground. And then his father says to him, I'm sorry, I spared all of this for you. His father comes back and says, I'll eat first, right? It's the line before the bolded Naspe Masvel Nimrod. Omerle Ma'ata Maflabi. Like, are you making fun of me? V'yadin and Inan? Do these idols have knowledge? Right? They can't do this. Like, his father says, you're making fun of me. Omerle V'lo Yishmu'u Aznecha Mashapicha Omer. And Avram says, by the way, you can decide also if that's said with respect or that's said, because as I already have said, that Terach apparently has some respect for his father. Is Avram respectful when he says this, or is this a little bit of chutzpah? Okay, as I said, this may depend on how you read it, but he says, do your ears hear what your mouth is saying? Avram's father, Terach, just now said that these things are inanimate objects. They do not know what's going on. They do not have any knowledge. Conclusion, they do not have any capabilities. Now you read the next phrase, Naspe Umasre Lenimrod. He took him and he gave him over to Nimrod. Okay, so I'm saying that's the line in the story that I wanted you to see, is that how did Avram get to Nimrod? Terach is outraged about what Avram does, and he's the one who hands him over to Nimrod. Which is also interesting. This is not the situation that Avram is standing up in, you know, in terms of the crowds and trying to win the crowds over. This is his own father saying, your behavior is unacceptable, and gives them over to Nimrod. And giving somebody over to someone named Nimrod is never going to be a good thing. You know, in Israel, if you meet someone named Nimrod, it means he was not born into a religious family. I've never met a Nimrod who was born into a religious family. What does the word Nimrod mean? The one who rebels, right? It is not a character in Tanakh who is a very positive character. He's the prototype for Esav, the great hunter, the powerful one. He's the one who builds the cities. He's the one who controls others. So this Midrash, what did it just now tell us? It says, who gave him over? Who gave up Avraham? Terach. Terach. He gets to Nimrod, and Nimrod says, let's worship the fire, which, by the way, just now gave you another interpretation what Ur Kasdim may mean. It may mean the place that worships fire. He goes, let's worship fire. Amule niskod lenura, let's worship fire. Now, Avram again uses this kind of logic where he goes backwards. He goes, hold it. But can't water extinguish fire? Okay, let's worship water. Doesn't water come from clouds? Let's worship clouds. Aren't clouds moved by the wind? Let's worship the wind. Can't a person stand up and withstand the wind? Let's worship people. To which point Nimrod gets tired of this and says, let's go back to the fire. You know, that's sure and proven. Let's go back and worship the fire. And at that point, he's thrown into the fire. Now, right before that happens, there's somebody else who's watching this. Who is it? Okay, a line on top of where it's bold again, Havatam and Haran, Ani eini mishtachave elu l'ur. He goes, no, let's get back to the Ur. Again, Ur Kazdim, let's get back to the fire. Hareini mashlichacha b'tocho, v'yavo alel shatam mishtachave lo v'yitzacha himenu. I'm going to throw you into the fire, and now it's not just that he broke the idols, let's see your God come and save you. Havatam and Haran kaim plug. Haran, he's there, and he's watching this conversation, really, this argument taking place. I'm a man of shach. Im nitzach Avram ana amar min da Avram ana. Im nitzach Nimrod ana amar de Nimrod ana. So he is somebody who thinks politically, right? I'll be on the winning side. If Avram proves victorious, I'm with Avram, and if Nimrod proves victorious, I'm with Nimrod. All right, everything's negotiable. Avram comes out of the fire, so he says, I'm going to go in the fire as well. So not only is he political, he's a thrill seeker. Okay, let's see how the fire works out. But unfortunately, it does not work out. Kevin Shiorot Avram Lekivshon Ha'ish V'nitzol Amin Le'deman At Amalahun Man Min Avram Ana. And Haran is asked, so whose side are you on? He goes, I'm with Avram. Not Lu V'shlichu L'ur. And he was thrown into the fire. B'nech Maru B'nei Me'av. And he was consumed with the fire. V'yatzu U'meit Al P'nei Terech Aviv. And therefore he died Al P'nei Terech Aviv. So this Midrash, if you follow it all the way through, is blaming Terech for the death, because Terech was the one who got Avram in the situation to begin with. And Haran was the unfortunate one whose thinking we don't necessarily like, but he's the one who got himself in this situation. Okay. Let's now look at the Malbim in source number 3. So now you see, my whole reading on this was colored by the Malbim, because the Malbim comes out and says this very clearly, very straight. He says, Sheterach garam mitato, kuhu higid l'nimrod shabonov ozvu avodat hatzlamim v'ayedeze hushlachu l'kivshon ha'esh kamasha kosov chazal. So he's saying is, again, that pasuk, Haran al-Penei Terech, that's the pasuk the Midrash was explaining. So here the Malbim says, no, that's exactly what the Midrash means. That's how he was killed. Va'amr shemeit ba'ur kazdim, shakazdim avdu et ha-shemesh v'ha'esh. So what the Malbim over here is being sensitive to the Midrash and to the text, noticing the word ur, and say it must be that here is a kind of place that they worshipped the sun, they worship the fire. Where in Israel did they once worship the sun? Beit Shemesh, right? The house of the rising sun. Yes? Yes. Beit Shemesh, the house of the rising sun, right? Someone should write a song about that. Okay. Where do they worship the moon? Yericho. And it could both be true. The Amishmeit Ba'ur Kazdim Shakazdim of avdu et ha-shemesh v'ha-esh, v'ayalahem or bo er tamid lo vata-esh. They had an air tamid. They were always throwing people into the fire. V'yikar kamasha katav, what's that next? Rav Yitzchak Abarbanel, see? She'or kazdim haya be'ever ha-na'ar. It was the other side of the river. Other side of the Euphrates. But what did I just now gain from that? Naharayim, does that... Be'ever ha-na'ar, but where does that come from? Okay. Avram ha-Ivri. Now, Avram ha-Ivri, just to have fun right now, how many times was it used? Once. Avram Avri is only used once. Okay, we'll see if we can have time to get to it. She'orka was the other side of the Nahar. V'nimrod ha'ya moshel gam sham. K'mashkav min ha'aretz asher yotza Ashur. She'kavash gam be'evar Nahar v'gam b'charan. Sorry. Gam be'evar Nahar v'rak b'charan lo mashal. Now you notice what just now happened? He just now turned this into politics. It's politics, it's military, it's where's a safe place, which means Nimrod is the first person who's he's building, he's conquering, he's in charge. So part of what he's saying, which is information that we don't have enough of, and that is that Nimrod is capturing different places, and you're only going to be safe in a place that Nimrod doesn't control. So therefore he's saying the choice of going to Haran was a very simple choice. Why? Because it was safe. Now, the other thing that he has to get to, just in case we don't remember, and this is what Jerry had mentioned before, when you go back to source number one, we'll return to the Malbim in a moment, in Pasuk Lamed Aleph it says, V'yikach terech et Avram b'no, v'et lot ben Haran ben b'no, v'et sarai kalato eshet Avram b'no, v'yetsu itam mi'ur kazdim, l'lechet artza knan. Now, that's one of the great mysteries. Why in the world was Terach want to go to Eretz Canaan? V'yavo ad Haran v'yishvu sham. But he gets as far as Haran and he settles there. So what the Malbim is going to do for us is going to explain all of this in terms of geopolitical considerations, which means who's controlling different places and or what the rumors are that they hear in different places. So according to what he's told us so far, although it hasn't been as clear as you would like, that he can't stay there. We don't know yet exactly why, but let's hold on, we'll read more. He can't stay there. He's under the impression that a safe place will be Eretz Canaan. On the way to Eretz Canaan, he gets to Haran, and what does he find in Haran? He finds that Nimrod is not in charge of this place, and he's safe. And that's the reason he doesn't have to go any further. So this whole thing is about survival, and this whole thing is about politics, and who's actually the leader in that, or what kind of regime is going to be controlling any of these places. Let's read a little bit more. We're skipping and so on. Where it's underlined. So now he just gave you both interpretations. Is it that they worshipped, or is it because this is the place of the furnace? V'yikach terach, Pasuk Lamed in the Malbim, a little further down, next paragraph. Koma she siper adhena hu hatza'al lahodia hasiba she'nia terach letzeit l'eretz Canaan. The Hebrew is almost modern. I hope you appreciate that. Everything I've written till now, I'm trying to say here, he says this is a suggestion in order to explain why in the world he's going to Canaan. Again, koma she siper adhena hu hatsa'a lahudia hasiba shehinia et terach, the motivation for terach letzeit l'eretz Canaan. Ki ba'asher Haran meit v'Avraham lo yalad, that Haran is dead and Avraham has no children, hayta mishpachto ktana. They have a very small, and now what goes with small? Vulnerable. They're a very small and vulnerable family. That the reason Terach has to go, again, this is just, do you like this? It's almost like, this is not religious considerations. These are survival considerations. You have a really small family, you're vulnerable. Next line. Vagam Shirola Avram Beno Nirdaf Nimrod. And more than that, he knows that Avram is not safe over here because he's not the most popular person. Again, the consideration is, starts out religious, but now you go down as a political thinker. You know, Avraham is never going to be a popular person in this place. Miracles don't happen every day. That was the answer that Reb Zera gave to Rabba when he tried to kill him on Purim, and he invited him back the next year to have the Purim sued again. That's the answer. He goes, miracles don't happen every day. Not thank you, but no thank you. Yatsa lalechet le'eretz Kanan. He therefore decided to go to Eretz Kanan. Now it's bolded. Shesham hayu b'nei shem be'etahi shenifredu mi b'nei cham v'nimrod malkam. Now this is something we have to figure out. Where did he get that from? He says that it is b'nei shem. By the way, b'nei shem is just not anybody. B'nei shem is his family. Again, thinking politically, survival, who's in charge? Let me leave the place that Nimrod's in charge, or B'nai Cham are in charge, and let me move over to a place that has B'nai Shem, because then, even though we're a small, strange, different kind of family, by the way, there's almost a Jewish motif to this, let me go and find a place where we have more landsmen, where we have more people, that we could therefore be protected, and that was the reason to go. That was the reason to go over. V'shamo yugam beit Avraham v'sham yimlat machmat Nimrod memshelto. Pasuk lamed aleph, the next paragraph in the. Of course, which is why I was surprised when you said yeah. So hold on a second. I was surprised, and then he continues and says v'yikach terech. He doesn't only take Avram, who is someone that Nimrod is most likely at this point extremely upset with. Right, Nachor stays behind, and that's where later on we're going to get the Rivka and the Rachel and the Leah families will come from. They do not. They're not monotheists. The Elohei Necher, right, when it says Elohei Avram v'Elohei Nachor Yishpetu Beinenu, different gods, so therefore they stay behind a different belief system. Rak Shalot Mitzad Shehu Ben Haran V'Gam Alav Hayachshad HaMelech Shehu Oyev Lo Kihu Gol Hadam Shel Aviv. So why does he grab Lot and take him away from there? Because Lot and Avraham are the two people who Nimrod may want to kill. He'll want to kill Avram because Avram was the one who starts all this trouble. But he's going to want to kill Lot because he's going to say Lot may have, meaning Nimrod is a good leader. A good leader means he tries to figure out every day where the threats come from. If anybody's mad at him, it's going to be Lot because what? Because he killed his father. So therefore, Lot, whether he wants to or interested or not, he calls him the Goel Hadam. He goes, he may want to take vengeance against Nimrod. So therefore, if there's going to be a potential assassination plot, it's going to come from Lot. And who understands this? Terach understands this. Terach is, again, our geopolitical thinker who puts all of this together and says, I have to get out of here, I'm going to take Avram out of here, and I have to take Lot out of here, because my family is very small. On the other hand, why is Nahor able to stay behind? Because he adopts whatever is the belief system which is there, so he's able to try to fit in with the others. Now, the one thing which I said, which maybe we still would have to try to prove.
Is supporting Abraham.
Who?
Is supporting Abraham.
Either yes or no, but he also realizes that as being the father of Terach and the grandfather of Lot or the father of Haran who was killed, that he may also be perceived as an enemy. Which means there's also self-interest.
The Gemara goes and says he's one of the four people who are going back.
Who?
Terach.
I don't know why the Gemara would say that. He died. I think you're talking about Eliezer. Okay, I don't recall that Gemara, and he dies at the end of Noah, so I don't know what to do. Just one second. But last three words of source one, Vayamat Terach Bicharan.
I know.
Okay, fine. Yes.
Terach took him out before he handed him over to the murder, after he handed him over to the murder.
After he survived.
After
Terach gives him over, but Avram survives. Now Terach's in a... I mean, Terach tried to be the good guy. Terach tried to fit into the mores of the society. But Avram's survival puts him in an impossible situation. Not only does Avram survive, but ironically, the death of his other, the death of Haran puts him in a difficult situation, because now he is suspect and his family is suspect because they may want to take vengeance.
And Terach now believes in.
We have no evidence one way or the other. Now, see, that's what's interesting. I want to go back a step. When I asked the question, we all asked the question: why in the world was Terach on his way to Eretz Canaan? One answer you can give would be the Zionist answer. Why? I want to say it in a particular way. Terach was the kind of guy who would go on the trips to India. He was searching for spirituality. He opened up his idolatry shop because he was searching for some kind of spiritual connection. Once the idols are shattered, he searches some other spiritual connection. And then I can say, and you can ask me how I know this, and I'll say, I don't know this. I'm making this up. He said he's giving you a suggestion. I'm giving you a suggestion. The Terach has this feeling that Eretz Canaan is a holy place. And therefore, as if a magnet is pulling him, he feels this is where he has to go. Why, as a Zionist, do you find that so difficult? He senses holiness. He has spiritual sensitivity. I once met somebody who was a Jew, but was very into Eastern religions. And they came to Israel. They came to Israel. And they were absolutely, absolutely had no knowledge of Judaism. And a friend of them, maybe even a relative of theirs, took them to the Kotel. And I met him literally 15 minutes later. And he asked me, he goes, what's the significance of that wall? I said, why? He said, I felt an unbelievable power by that place. He goes, I never felt anything like this before. I felt, what is the, and he had no idea what the Kotel was, Beit HaMikdash, whatever, I had to go explain everything. And he's there telling me that he felt things that I think most of us go there, we never feel. So maybe Terach had spiritual sensitivity, and Terach goes and feels this. You don't like that? Terach heard there are great beaches all the way from Caesarea down to Ashdod, and Terach was a surfer. I mean, which one of these answers do you like better? But on the way he stops, and that's really what's disturbing. But I'll say it again. If the genius of Avraham comes because of Terach naming his son after his father, Terach also is the one who senses that Eretz Yisrael has a place of Kedusha, but he can't follow through. And now you realize when God says, Lech Lecha, and finally, right, from the place you were born, of course I want to get out of the place I'm born. They want to kill me over there, right? Get out of those lands, of course, Nimrod's in charge. Leave your father's home. So then now what is God saying to Avram at that point? He's never going to make it. And you have to realize there's a tragedy over here. I mean, Avram was the first person who's doing outreach. And he's impacting all kinds of people. So what is God saying to him? You're going to have success, except there's one person you're not going to have success with, and cut your losses and leave him behind. And who's that person? Your father. It's absolutely tragic when you read it like that. Especially a Nefesh Shazu B'Charan. He's successful. He's 52 years old. 52 till 75. He's being makar of people. He's having impact. He's talking about monotheism. And then God says, yeah, but your father, he's gone as far as he's going to go. That's it. He's not going any further. He's stopping right there. And now you have to pick up and move on. As I'll say, there's something very tragic. And it's the kind of thing that Avram, he's put in this position a number of times. You got to move on from Yishmael. But he's my... Move on. He's not the one.
By Lot.
It's constantly. Which means the tragedy of Avraham, the tragedy of Avraham of being this people person and this person who impacts others, who are being told, no, your father forget, and Lot forget, and Yishmael forget, and it's only Yitzchak. It's Yitzchak is the one. Focus on Yitzchak. And then kill Yitzchak. So I'm saying that's part of it. These are not independent observations. This is all part of the same thing. But that may be the proper way of reading that pasuk of Lech Lecha. Your father's gone as far as he's going as far as he's going to go. And when you have a chance, look at the Rashi at the very end of Parshat Noach. So let's see how much time we have left over here. So there's two things of note, which the Malbim both picks up on. Again, not the only one, but he's going to continue reading it in the way that we've read it. Let's go back to source number four. Lech lecha, go, leave your father's home and make you a great nation. Bless, curse, pasuk dalid. Vayelech Avram kasher diber lav Hashem. Avram goes as God has told him. And then the next part is very strange. Vayelech ito lot. He doesn't take Lot with him, at least not at first. He doesn't take Lot with him. Why doesn't he take Lot with him? Because Lot is part of Beit Aviv that he was told to leave. But Lot also has to make a choice. By the way, don't you realize that the choice that the Midrash told about his father is now the same choice that Lot has to make? Do I stay with Terach, who has probably reverted back to an idolater? Or do I go with Avraham? I'm with Terach, I'm with Avraham. Who am I going with? Who do I stay with? That's exactly the choice that he has. Avraham doesn't take him with him. But what does he do? So do you realize what I'm doing again and again? I'm trying to show you how the various Midrashim actually have their source in what's written over here in the text. So over here, Lot has his choice. What do I do? What does Lot do? So again, notice. God tells Avram, leave your birthplace, leave your home, leave your family, leave your Beit Avicha. And then it says, Vayelech Avram kasher dibar ilav Hashem. He does what God told him to do. But, Vayelech ito Lot. But Lot goes with him. Then we're told Avram is 75 years old when he leaves. Then Pasuk Hey, Avram goes again. Vayikach Avram et Sarai ishto ve'et Lot ben Achiv. So why is this twice? Why is this twice? So if you want to say that Avram went on two different missions, which Rav Breuer has a whole book about, it's always two different things he's doing, you can go in that direction. I think the simple interpretation is what I just now said. He went to do what God told him to do, but Lot hangs on. Now, once Lot hangs on, so what is Avram thinking? So Lot is really joining me. So he's not part of Beit Avi. He's not part of Terach. He's joining me. I'm with Avraham. Of course, what are we going to find out later on? That he's not. And then, as we continue, he goes, V'yitzu lechet arza kanan, v'yivu arza kanan, pasuk vav, which seems unimportant, v'ya'avar Avram ba'aretz, ad makom shchem, ad alon moreh, v'aknani az ba'aretz. V'aknani ba'az ba'aretz is actually, okay, so why is this telling us now? So the answer may very well be, is that Terach originally had wanted to go to the land of Canaan, looking for shame, and now he finds out that it's the Kanani, and who are the Kanani? B'nei Cham, which means the whole situation I thought I was avoiding, I got back to. And then God appears to Avram, and we will skip again. Later on, when Avram returns from Egypt, we have a similar type of observation. Again, it's sort of just stuck on at the end. We have source number 6, Pasuk Zayin, v'yiriv bein ro'ei mikne Avram bein ro'ei mikne Lot, v'aknani v'aprizi az yoshvei ba'aretz. And now there's more intrigue, not just the Knani, now the Prizi are there as well. All of this leads up to source number 8, where Lot gets kidnapped. The background is the war of the 4 kings against the 5 kings, and I'll point out again, there's intrigue over here. According to the Midrash, one of those kings is, in fact, Nimrod. By the way, the Nimrod side is against the Sodom side. So basically, you know, this is the Iran-Iraq war where you say, Sheyatzlichu, right? God give them both power, right? Meaning if you're Avram, you're standing on the side. So it's interesting. So what is the purpose of all this? And finally, I want to get to the character that the Midrash tells us is standing there when the whole thing is over. Who's that character? Who is the Melech? Who is he? Yes? Okay, those of you who don't know where I am at all, we're going to, in the end of source number 8, on page number 4, Malki Tzedek, Pasuk Yudchet. Umalki Tzedek Melech Shalem. Where is Shalem? So again, our theory of conservation of places now, Shalem, Yushalayim, so it's the same Yushalayim, is never mentioned in the Chumash. We love to say to the Muslims that Jerusalem is never mentioned in the Quran, so they like to say back to us, it's also never mentioned in the Chumash, except for maybe over here. We know it's hinted at in all kinds of places. Hotzi lechem v'yayin v'hu kohen la'el elyon. So who is this man who's the Kohen La'el Elyon? If you look at source 10, which is the Targum Yonatan, in Pasuk 18, Melech Tzedek, who Shem ben Noach, Melech Shem Yushalayim, Yotza Likrat Avraham. So now we finally found where in the world the Malbim got this from. The Terach thought that there are people from Shem there, but according to this, you have a very old man, who's there, and who is this old man? Shem himself, not just Sumper, it's Shem himself is there, so that's what Terach was searching for. Let me find from the Shem line, let me find some people who were like. Now, what happens over here, and we're going to just finish up now, there's two elements that I want to focus on. One is, why is Avim involved in this? So when we're young, it's a very simple reason. Because Lot's in trouble. Lot always seems to be in trouble, and Avim has to save Lot. It's not the first time foreshadowing he's going to save Lot again. Lot will be saved b'zchut Avram. Good. That's all that we look at. I think there's something else going on. The Kenania Ba'aretz, the Prizi Ba'aretz, the four kings, the five kings, they're all fighting in this land, and Avram gets dragged into this. But what happens when he gets dragged into this? He's victorious. So what just now happened? Avram just now made a kinyan in Eretz Yisrael. By the way, what is it that the king says? What bracha does he say? What is it that he's focusing on? He speaks about God who has an acquisition in heaven and earth. Avram, by fighting and being victorious, has just now made his acquisition in Eretz Yisrael. We always think of his first acquisition in terms of paying for the place that Sarah is going to be buried. Avram being dragged into this whole battle has just now captured everything from all the other people involved over here. And again, we shouldn't get carried away. The four kings and the five kings were probably little local, what's the term they would use today? A chamula, but the head of the chamula is a chieftain. Yeah, these are probably not as, but still, the Midrash sensitivity, Nimrod was dragged right into this. This is Nimrod involved in this fight. Avram is defeating Nimrod now. But Avram's not just defeating Nimrod, he's defeating the one who defeated all the others, which means that if they defeated everyone, now they have the land. He defeated the one who was defeated, so now Avram, or the one who defeated the others, now Avram has control of everything. Akshav Avram Kana, it's Eretz Israel. Avram now has control of everything. And if it's not enough for the present, then at least it's foreshadowing for the future. By the way, I think there's something similar. I always have to get back to the vegetarian point, that I think that Noah saving all the animals gave him now a right over the animals. He saved the animals, now he can eat animals. Why? Because he's the one who saved them all. The same way now, he made a kinyan in all the animals. Now they're under his, now they're under his. Of course you can still argue which are kosher, which are not kosher. The Torah says say what are kosher. But for B'nai Noach, they're all kosher, as long as they're not alive anymore. But Avraham, in the same way, got dragged into all of this, so now he made a kinyan. But on the other hand, there's something else which is taking place, and that is the baton is being handed over. Is that we're searching for Shem, we're searching for B'nai Shem, but we found Shem himself. And he's the Kohen of Yerushalayim, but he hands over the baton to Avraham, and now Avraham is the one who just now made a kinyan in Eretz Yisrael. Which means what I really tried to do is to show, with the help of the Malbim, was to show the religious issues, but the political issues, and show how the two of these issues are really woven together and help really inform us and to motivate what was taking place during that time. Survival, let's get to a bottom line here. Survival was really the main thing. A quick observation, then we end. I think if you were an actuary and you were trying to analyze the chances of Avraham and Sarah dying of old age at the ages that they did, you would have said that's virtually impossible. It's not possible. Avram thrown into a furnace, so you give the odds on that. I don't know how they play that in Vegas, but the odds of Avram surviving, the odds of Sarah surviving from the clutches of either Paro or Avimelech, the odds of Yitzchak getting off of the Akedah, all of these things were impossible odds. Avram getting dragged again, going travel itself was dangerous in those days. Not just travel, going to war. What percentage of people do you think survived wars in those days? So for Avram to travel, to go to war, to be thrown into a furnace, to be to have the opposition that he did, but to die as an old man in his bed, in his sleep, was something you never would have imagined. And maybe that's part of really what Jewish history is all about. Whoever would have suspected that we would be around so long, that we would be successful, and we would avoid all of those problems in front of us. And sometimes we get hurt, and sometimes along the way we lose some of our people. But whoever would have imagined that would have been around so long? So the answer is simple. Just read Lech Lecha. Just read Vayera. And what are you going to find out? That when it's God's will, we will in fact survive.